Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What You Need to Know is brought to you by Morongo Casino Resort and Spa. Good times, less than 90 minutes from wherever you are. Laura, what do you got?
All right, so I heard you guys were excited about this story. You guys wanted to talk about it, so I was like, oh, let's do it. So, Matt, you guys know I just moved, and I was looking for furniture. I actually went through Craigslist, didn't really find anything that was interesting to me. But this lady went, found what she needed, got it for free, but then, you know, got a little gift in there when she examined the sofas. She found $36,000. In that furniture, said furniture. She did return the money. She reached out to the family and said, hey, this is what I found. But I thought it was cool that the family said, thank you for returning the money. And then they paid for her fridge.
They paid for her fridge. How much did that fridge cost? Do you take
$2,200.
I'd take the cash value personally, but maybe I wouldn't either because I don't know that I want to take cash from somebody who's leaving cash in a couch. You know what I'm saying, Angela?
Well, the family member passed away. They gave out, you know, the stuff. There's more to the story. I'm just making
so it yeah. I'm a believer that possessions is 9/10 of the law.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I think it's different if like see because we've had this conversation in different variations and forms over the years, and like for example, if all of a sudden, you know, you're driving on the 405, and some Brinks truck opens up and money's flying everywhere, I ain't getting any of that because they finding you, bro. Okay. Right. Like that ain't happening. And even if I were to find, like, some suitcase randomly somewhere, right, with cash in it or a duffel bag, right, around, like, L.A. Live, I'm like, too many cameras around here. Something's up, okay? I ain't getting caught like this, all right? I'm leaving this right here. I'm going to take it to the authorities, right? I'm going to go to the – I'm going to find a security guy and be like, hey, yeah, there's this bag here. You guys take care of that, okay? So – but if I buy a couch at some random concession store or whatever the hell –
like a Salvation Army or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I find $5,000 in it, it's staying with me.
So that's your threshold, $5,000. Okay, can now let me
well, I'm not saying it's the money. It's not the money. It's the if I find $100 in the couch that I bought at Salvation Army or Goodwill or wherever,
it's your
or
money.
Some consignment store, I'm keeping the money. I bought the couch.
Okay, now here's what I'm going to say in sort of the opposite direction. I'll go right up to about $10,000, because $10,000 in cash is the limit that you have to fill out a form at the bank in order to deposit it in cash. I learned that
right,
when I was a teller back in the day.
But that is true, but you could also just, you know, start depositing it.
I get that, but here's the thing, though. The reason why it's got to be a one-shot deal is because if we get above that number, then I'm starting to believe that the people whose money it actually is – do not have the same regard for the law that I might have. And
right,
I do not want to be on these people's bad side. I do not need to be out on my deck one day and some guy asks me, hey, where's that $15,000 when I'm chilling trying to eat breakfast? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what I'm more afraid of than I am somebody seeing me on a camera taking the money. I need to know who that money belongs to.
Well, there's that
I'm
too.
Actually
that is
trying to take that off
but
their
those,
house.
Those people, though, they sold it. Like, they obviously sold the couch knowing or not knowing that the money was in there.
Yeah, they gave
so
it
they're,
away.
So they're not missing it because they don't know it's there. Because if they did know it was there, they wouldn't have given them the couch.
Are you familiar with the little concept we called mules and stash houses? They might not have known it was there. Somebody might have known it was there, is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, if there's something in a box in your basement that you don't know is there, you discussed this before with your boyfriend in the garage. Oh. You know what I mean? If you didn't know it was there and then you gave it away and then you found out, wait a second, something of mine
but
is in there.
But at that point, it's off. Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's tough because depending on where that money comes from, it might come back to haunt you.
So the reason why this story was like it gravitated to me, I mean, obviously 36K, but I was my mom used to love to like go to garage sales and stuff, right? Because she used to sell at the swap meet. So one of my friends was like, hey, my neighbor in front of me is moving. They threw away a bunch of stuff. It looks kind of cool, like whatever. So I go in, the lady's like, oh, yeah, like old frames. But I didn't even want the picture in it. I just wanted the frame because it looked cool. And this older lady comes running out of the house. It was like, not that one.
Exactly.
And then she was like, no, ma, we don't need it, blah, blah, blah. She was like, just take it. It literally in my car. And the lady looks at me and she goes, not that one.
Yikes.
And I was like, oh, okay. Like, here's your thing back. The lady opens the back of it, and there's a bunch of cash in the back.
See?
And why would she do that in front of you? That's weird.
And then, like, I don't know, girl. That's their thing. But, yeah. like, she goes, the lady goes, like, the one that was giving it to me, she's like, Ma, that was all in there? And she was like, yeah, that's why I said not that one.
Right. And that's somebody's mom running out of the attic. Yeah. That's not somebody's cousin with the 4-4 mag on him pulling up in the, you know, in the Cadillac. You don't want
crazy.
That. That's not good for business.
Did everybody else at the sale like them like crowd around and be like, oh my God, what is this? What is all this money?
Tearing everything up.
Yeah. No. She just like rips out all this money out of a thing. I'd be like, oh my gosh, what's going on here?
Because the thing it was like a young girl, you know, kind of like I've told my mom, take all this crap out and just donate it, whatever. And this lady, like this older lady, probably my mom's age, comes running out and I'm like, damn, lady, you got some. You ran track somewhere,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Her money was back there, so she wanted that.
That's funny. That is funny.
That is what you need to know. Brought to you by Morongo Casino Resort and Spa. Good times. Less than 90 minutes from wherever you are. Now, I want to ask you a question, Clinton, because Stephen A. Smith, our pal, today said something. What was it he said? That Michael Jordan ruined the game? Is that what he said?
I've tried so hard to stay away from this until it was time to do it, but please let me know. Do we have the sound or were we just operating on rumor? Because I saw this on Twitter.
Right.
And I saw
Kevin Durant went back out.
I saw
Steve and
KD and
Shannon
getting
Sharp.
Into this. Yes. I'm not this is not my pay grade, so I'm going to listen to you tell me this story.
Yeah, I mean, he basically said whether Steph Curry and Michael Jordan have changed the game of basketball in a positive way, and Stephen A said that he believed that Steph had changed the game for the better, and that Michael Jordan was responsible as much as anyone for changing the game for the worse. And what? I don't think that's such a hot take, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Now, I'll give you my understanding of it. Because Michael Jordan, when you think about what Michael Jordan was. Now, yes, we have those moments of him passing to Steve Kerr or John Paxson or whatever. But for the most part, Michael Jordan ushered in the one-on-one basketball era.
The ball hog era, yes.
Correct. And what ended up happening was, after the fact, you know, when Kobe was still young, right? Like, you know, that was part of the issue with him and Shaq, right? Like, that was part of the crux of their issues together. And then the other part of it is you had guys like, and I love Allen Iverson, but you know, people say, when you look at that Philly team, well, it was basically one guy and then a bunch of dudes just rebounding for him. You know what I mean? And like playing defense for
right.
him. And same thing with Steve Francis or Stephon Marbury, right? Like those, a lot of those that, and I think that's what's, and again, I did not see it, but there are plenty of people that have that opinion. Like, I don't think he's alone on that. And I think when you look at the Warriors, as you kind of alluded to earlier, Clinton, if they play Warrior style of basketball, you feel like they should be fine. And the Warrior style of basketball is basically an evolution of what kind of the Spurs did most recently,
sure.
right? Which is just tremendous ball movement, right? And the Warriors kind of took that and put it on its head, right? And by the way, before the Spurs, the Suns did it in a way that just didn't equate to a championship. But the other part of this is that I actually think Stephen A's right, but KD took it as an opportunity to take a swipe at Stephen A and Skip and Shannon and saying that they ruined basketball for the worse because of their takes.
Okay, number one, this is such a New York type story where the big guard for the second biggest team brand wise in the, like, them arguing about this in public is very funny to me on a level that is completely separate from the actual discussion. So there's that part. As for the discussion, George, this is hard for me for one reason, and I don't mean to sound ignorant on this, but I'm only 41 years old. There's not a world I know in any reality outside of, you know, studying old tapes for various reasons of research in which I can think of the on-the-ground sporting impact of anybody without Michael Jordan being part of the discussion.
Right.
That's just not there. And so it's really hard for me to parse this notion of basketball before and after, not because I'm not smart enough to do it, but because what basketball was, forget about just on the court, but in all of our understandings, so completely changed after Michael Jordan really blew up and then went to an even deeper sort of realm of what our connectivity to basketball is in general with Allen Iverson, who is my favorite basketball player of all time. It's hard for me to say that. Because I don't know that I would care about basketball if it wasn't for those guys. You know what I'm saying?
I get it.
And so, like, sure, the on-the-court style of Michael Jeffrey Jordan, basically give it to Jordan and figure out the rest. But he happened to have a good enough coach and a good enough system where they put guys around him so that it looked as if it was the smart play, not just the sort of easy play. There's no world in which I'm going to say that made basketball worse. I just can't. It doesn't make sense to me. And so to comparatively talk about Jordan to Curry, sure, they might have been similar in that they both affected change in the same way.
Huge way.
But there's no way for me to comparatively say one was better than the other. That just doesn't add up to me.
Only because, you know, the fruit that it bared out, right, was not as great post-Jordan. Now, you can also make the case that that was because it was just the greatest superstar maybe we'd ever seen in professional sports in America had retired, and there was just this vacuum. And, you know, Shaq and Kobe were too young still, and like, they were just getting started in their run. And that vacuum that was left was too big. You know what I mean? Like, it just was, even for those guys, right? And I thought they filled it fairly admirably, those two in particular. But, you know, for as much as I give Kaplan grief about Tom Brady, when Tom Brady retires, now, granted, there's going to always be great quarterbacks. I mean, there's going to leave a little bit of a vacuum, although there are unbelievable quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and even Aaron Rodgers if he still stays around. But it's going to be a little bit of a vacuum. But Michael Jordan, that's like there's not a vacuum big enough in the world, right?
It's a vacuum of a lifetime, and that's where this is so difficult for me, because at the same time, I hear people telling me all the time, well, the NBA now is not what it was in the 90s. And I'm like, well, hold on. Are you going to say Jordan ruined the game because he was better than the people that you think were better than the average people now? Like, the argument doesn't stack up to me, because I hear all the time, he beat this guy, he beat that guy, that's why they never got a ring. Okay, those were great players. How does that ruin the game if he's beating the best players you all people consider of your lifetime? I don't understand.
I thought the early 2000s was not great basketball.
No.
I thought. Overall. And by the way, this isn't the reason, but it's why the Lakers, the Lakers stood out in such a big way because they had Shaq and Kobe, because of Phil Jackson, that run of the Lakers team, I thought their role players were better than any of the Bulls role players, like as a collective.
Oh, let's talk about this. Who are you referring to? I'm genuinely asking you. Like, you think so?
I think the combination of Ori, Fox, and Fisher are better than any three role players you can name
from the
Bulls combined.
And we're not counting Rodman as a role player because he was a big star.
No, he's a Hall of Famer.
I guess that's probably true. And I think that the connectivity between the difference between the Bulls and the Lakers, I thought, was that the gap between the star players and the role players was bigger than it was with the Bulls. And I know they had Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, but those teams seem to be just a little different in terms of how all the pieces fit together, where the role players, I don't want to say seemed like stars, but it was just a different relationship, in my opinion, in terms of how the Bulls ran their team versus how those.
I also feel like Shaq in particular.
Well, yeah, he's Shaq.
Was great about giving those guys love, right? When he had the stage, right? Like, he'd always talk about Robert Horry and Rick Fox and Derek Fisher. Like, he really talked them up in the media, which I think helped in a big way too. Whereas I don't feel like Jordan really did any of that.
No. I mean, you didn't see Jordan talking about guys unless he was ripping them in practice.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And making sure that they were motivated enough to do it. But Jordan also, he was just a completely different sort of supernova in the context of not just basketball, not even just sports, but American marketing. You know what I mean? The guy was a global superstar on a level that we'd never seen to that point, at least not in the modern NBA.
And I would also push back on Kevin Durant about Stephen A., Skip, and Shannon, because those guys have gotten us to understand Kevin Durant even more so than we ever have because of his being so vocal about his disdain for them. So I actually look at that as a positive.
I think that's funny, too, because in the same way that I was mentioning, I don't know a world without Jordan. How old is KD? KD doesn't know a whole lot of worlds where these guys haven't been yelling on TV for a long time. You know what I mean? I'm
and
not
by
really
the way,
sure what his point of reference is.
I remember years and years and years ago, I did an interview with LeBron, and we were talking about Skip Bayless at the time, and just all the stuff he would say about him. And LeBron just laughed. He's like, Skip is like my Howard Cosell. You know what I mean? And I think that LeBron is always, while he's used it as fuel, he's always just kind of laughed it off for the most part, I think. Whereas KD, he's like, nah, I'm not laughing. I'm kind of annoyed.
Oh, KD's not laughing at all. But then again, we saw the headlines today. LeBron James, billionaire. So
he is a billionaire. Congratulations. Like,
things
to LeBron.
Are getting very, very nice in the James household these days.
Yes, for sure. All right, coming up next, the greatest story that we've had this week is this fantasy football story
by
in Major
miles.
League Baseball. And there has taken an even another twist into this thing. So we got to get to that because everyone has a crazy fantasy football story. I have one I told yesterday. I don't know if you heard it, but I will tell it again.
Okay.
I did it during Crosstalk, Super Crosstalk, pardon me, yesterday. And I will tell you about that story coming up as well, Clinton, because I think you will laugh. You will howl with laughter when I tell you this story.
Okay, good.
All right, that's coming up next, plus Radio Tinder at 5:30. And then our buddy Blake Harris, who is our Dodgers insider. Check out his Substack. Subscribe to it. It's the best Dodger info you're going to get, I think. Someone covering the Dodgers on a daily basis. You know, I'm just not putting him on just because I don't, you know, I'm doing the guy a favor. Like, I literally think the kid is really, really good, and you should be taking in his content. So he's going to join us in the last segment before we turn it over to the NBA Finals. All right, we're back in 2 minutes.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sedano and Cap with you here, CY, hanging out today. We'll take you up till 6 o'clock for game one of the NBA Finals.
I was not in the club last night.
You were not?
No.
We all were.
Yeah, you all were. I was not.
You got the rubber.
Exactly. Okay. Well played.
We can go on another Wednesday if you'd like.
Nah, y'all aren't invited. I'm going to have a whole side crew. We're going to do live broadcasts. It's going to be great. Taylor's going to be a huge star.
CY and the side crew.
Yeah.
I don't think he needs you to be a huge star. He's clearly a huge star after last night,
Clinton. I didn't say he needed me. I was just letting the people know who want to join on board.
People were raving about him on Twitter, like his Mason shared that video, and people are like, this guy's got it. Jorge was like, this kid has talent.
Good, I might bring some of my industry friends. Tell you what.
Get him a record deal.
Tell you what. That's like certain straight out of the Nashville headlines. You know what I mean? Storylines, excuse me. Anyway, fantasy football.
So this story, now for those that don't know the genesis of this story, Lindsay, do you want to tell this? Clinton, do you want to
tell the genesis of this story?
Okay, go ahead.
So Tommy Pham is a player who plays for the Reds at this point. He was in the minor leagues for a really long time. You might remember him from being stabbed outside of a gentleman's establishment quite a few times when he was enjoying his night. This was probably 5 years ago or so. Jock Peterson, who we all know well from his Palo Alto career, tremendous high school wide receiver, I believe, goes on. You know, he played for the Dodgers, Jocktober, all that, went over to the Braves, blah, blah, blah. Now he's with the hated Giants, and he's got the blonde hair going, looking like he's got a career in WWE after his baseball career. Now, apparently, news broke, like, I think it was, what day is today? Today's Thursday.
I think this was like the day or two after I told you I saw him ringing the bell at the Warriors game.
Yeah, yes, it was about a week ago. And there was a night, it was a relatively late in the day report. I think they were doing a pregame pool. And Jock revealed that, I'm forgetting the order of the
Tommy
story
Pham
now.
Tommy Pham had snacked.
It was out there. He said there was a fantasy football situation, and then that was day one of the news story. Everybody in the baseball world laughed and ran with it and said, oh, my goodness, big reminders of the movie How High, Where's My Powder? If you haven't seen that and don't know that reference, you should check it out. And we're thinking to ourselves, dag, Major League Baseball players are slapping each other in the face over fantasy football? This is great. Then we find out, George, the smoking gun in the TMZ era, that there is video. Grainy ballpark cam video from it behind the dugout, maybe inside the dugout, and Pham just walks up to him in left field and pops him in the face.
Right.
And this is where the news gets crazy for me.
Yeah.
Young Jock does nothing at all, and there are multiple people around. And then Pham says, well, he was messing with my money. Next thing you know, Pham gets suspended for 3 games. Now his money's really messed with.
Yeah.
Then in the interim, Jock Peterson reveals the gift that he sent that set off Pham, which was so incredibly harmless. I can't believe they went off over this. And then finally,
what was the gift? I didn't know that.
The gift was something. It was like, oh man, it was like something sort of looked like an ALS challenge kind of thing where people were doing dumping buckets on their head and one right. person really screwed it up. And it was the girl of the three, and that symbol had the Padres over it, which is Pham's old team, while the yeah. other teams in it were not teams that he had played for.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah. It was childish. It was not a big deal right. at all.
And then Tommy Pham reveals that the problem was that Mike Trout is a terrible commissioner.
The huge reveal of all of this
yeah.
is that Michael Trout, who people don't even know the sound of his voice, who have liked baseball for a long time, is in the interim. The Golden Boy is slumming it in his illicit fantasy football leagues with Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson. Oh, the drama. We love it.
So here's my fantasy football story.
Okay.
So back in the day, kids, when not pre-internet,
but
pre-everything
happened on the internet. Yeah.
Right. Everything happened on the internet. The drafts were not on the internet, were not necessarily a thing. Okay. Let's just say.
No, you had boards. You gathered with your crew. That was
Correct.
Kind of the whole thing.
Correct. There were boards, big boards that like poster boards, like, you know, and then you'd pin them up somewhere.
Yeah.
And then there were stickers for each player. And there'd be, you know, little squares that you'd put the stickers for the player you drafted in said round, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you would congregate at somebody's house or maybe a bar in like a back room or something mm-hmm. or whatever. So I was at one of these events many, many years ago. And we had a time limit on picks. Okay. So we had like someone literally
were
like a
stop on the clock.
Yeah. And the clock expired. And the guy went to go up there and grab the name he wanted to grab. The guy that this was the guy who had the clock had expired on him.
Sure. Pick number three versus four, we'll just say.
Number four yeah. runs up and rips the sticker of the player out of his hand. I don't even remember who the player was. He was like in the third round or something. And rips it out. The sticker breaks in half. He then puts it on his square. And like this gets heated. The dude who was pick three, who the clock expired, grabs his beer, throws it at him.
Oh,
like,
no.
Like the mug. Like empties the mug in his face.
Okay, so not the fastball. Just turned on him.
Just
all right.
Poured it on him, basically. The dude who was the later pick grabs a handful of chicken wings and throws it at his face.
Oh, no.
People need to come up and separate that. I mean, this was a wild scene, okay? And when this story came out, I hadn't thought of this in 15 or 20 years, okay, because it'd been so long.
That's why it's funny, because you clearly had definitely forgotten about it, and as soon as this came up, you were like, oh, right.
I remember this, the beer thrown, the ripped sticker, the chicken wings, yes, all of it. Incredible stuff.
So let me ask you this. I have so many questions about this. Did you ever think, was this the kind of crew where this might have come to fisticuffs if they hadn't been separated? Or was it more of a hold me back and you
perhaps.
Guys didn't want to embarrass each other in public?
It was very early in the league for me. But knowing them later on, it might have. It could have.
Sure.
It could have is what I would say. And the last thing we wanted was A, fisticuffs. B, getting thrown out of the bar, not being able to finish the fantasy football draft. You know what I mean? Like, so there was a lot of things at stake here.
I've done one draft in public. Where, because I didn't play fantasy football in that era. I wasn't really into it. And I've done one draft in public where, in the exact opposite way, there were a bunch of people that were from around the country. And there happened to be a decent amount of those people that had sort of relocated to various parts of the East Coast that said, you know what, I'll show up for the draft. And lo and behold, it was the first time anybody in this group had ever done a draft where everybody was there in person, even though we were doing it on the internet. And the coolest thing happened, the exact opposite story, right when we're getting ready to get the number one pick on the clock, the last guy in this league who we never expected to show up, who was probably the worst player in the league, but all of our friends just walked through the door on the full surprise tip, and we all just exploded like, whoa, what's that guy doing here? And he had a great draft. It was really fun. We did not fight. We cheered.
I became the guy that because we would then do it both on the internet and in person, I think I did 1 year where that in person after that. Like, I was like, I can just stay home, do this on my laptop. I think I'm just going to do that.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's easier. I mean, if we did something here, a big event, I'd probably do that. I mean, we'd still use the internet, but I think live fantasy
football
drafts
are fun. We used to do a big fantasy, event.
Yeah.
where we'd have some of the fantasy guys from different companies come down and give people advice. We used to do that. We should probably do that again. I mean, it was all pre-COVID, obviously.
Right. So. Lindsay, you know what I do for fantasy football these days, right?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No. What do you do for fantasy football, Clint? Please tell
so
me.
So for those who don't
I'm
know.
I'm dying to know.
4 years ago, I was asked to be in what was then the Undefeated's Fantasy Football League. I didn't want to play. I was like, listen, you guys care about this a lot more than I do. I'm not really that good at it. I just like watching football with my friends and getting drunk or taking notes because I got to talk about it the next day on TV or whatever. They're like, nah, bro, you got to join the league. This is what we do. This, that, and the third. I'm like, okay, all right, guys. Sure, whatever. I won the league. Blew everybody out of the water, including beating my boss in the playoffs. Didn't know jack about it. Didn't care. Figured it wasn't that hard. Talked all the trash in the world. They were like, well, all right, well, what are you going to do next year? I was like, I'm not coming back. They're like, what are you talking about? You have to defend your title. I was like, all right, fine. I'll defend my title. Picked only white guys, and I've never gone back since. The Colonizers are the name of my fantasy football team. And they're not bad. It's not as bad as you think, but I did it just to jam it to them. I was like, all right, I'll beat you guys with only white dudes. And I beat a bunch of them. You know what I'm saying? And so that's what I do now. The Colonizers, it's a whole thing.
Ay, ay, ay.
I know, right? That's the fun part.
All right, coming up next, we've got Radio Tinder each and every day at 5:30. Then we'll talk some Dodgers with our pal Blake Harris at 5:45. Stick around. CY in for Cap. It's Sedano and Cap here on 710.
All right, so speaking of good times, have you guys ever been to a Las Vegas pool party, you know, any of the big clubs, and spent some time in their pool? Because if you have, you probably spent a crap ton of money. You probably had a really good time. And you probably even, like, slightly questioned the water in said pools. Well, Inside Edition recently tested the pool water at three popular Las Vegas clubs, Marquee Daylight Beach Club and Tao Beach Day Club, and they found everything from fingernails, cigarette butts, and disgusting foamy debris floating in the pool.
Snack away.
Well, then, after sending these samples to a lab, the results show, quote, a lot of fecal bacteria, and said that the potential for an infection occurring seems inevitable. One of the lab techs compared the results to, quote, swimming in a toilet. Would you ever swim in a Las Vegas club pool again, knowing this info? Swipe left or swipe right, Sedano?
Swipe left. I've never swam in one of those day party pools. I usually hang out outside the pool for those reasons, because I just assumed that that water was infested with nastiness.
I love the way I'm swiping left on this, but I love the way that we've got our best and brightest figuring out mysteries of the world. Like, I don't know, Las Vegas pool water is disgusting. I could have told you that without the usages of science, simply by using my eyeballs and seeing what the humans in front of my face are doing before and after they get in that pool.
That may be true, but it does not prevent thousands of people from flocking to said pools every day in Las Vegas. When I was there like 2 months ago, they had recently opened that giant sports book pool. I can't remember the name of which club it's at right now, but it's literally just a huge pool that has all these decks and there's this gigantic screen that's like the size of the entire hotel. And they have all these different games going on and everything. Yeah. And people were... It's packed. You have to have a reservation just to be able to enter the pool area. It's crazy.
I believe you and I understand that. But if... I don't know... a global pandemic wasn't going to stop people from doing what they're doing. I certainly don't think that a scientific study is going to stop people from showing up in Vegas and risking their lives just so they can get on the gram, which is a terrible state for America.
Really gross. Really, really, really gross.
Yeah, no thanks. I mean, there's a lot of things in Vegas that I really love. Those parties, while I used to enjoy them, the pool part of it, never something that I ever really took.
I was never cool enough to be a part of those while I was young enough to actually attend them.
So you didn't get the invites for the pool parties either?
Absolutely not. You know black folks don't get invited to the pool to swim. You know that. Come on now. No, I'm joking. But yeah.
I love Vegas, and it's like I had never been to Vegas until I think like 3 years ago when I went there for a work thing. And I was like, I hate gambling. You might as well throw your money out the window. I hate Vegas. Now I love it, especially since I win a bunch of stuff and I get stuff for free all the time. I've never been to a Vegas pool ever in my life. Like, it just does not appeal to me whatsoever. Yeah.
That's and you're not missing anything. Vegas is one of those places that as your station in life goes up, the experience there improves dramatically.
Oh, yeah. You get to learn all the ins and outs and stuff, like food places, all that. All right. So next one. A Swedish woman broke a Guinness World Record when she went tandem skydiving at the age of 103 last week.
What?
Yes. The Guinness adjuster was on hand to confirm that the woman earned the record for the oldest tandem parachute jump ever for a female. The previous record holder was 103 years and 129 days old when she jumped out of a plane in 2019. Not much more to this story, but wanted to know, have you ever, or, and if you haven't, would you ever skydive? Clinton, swipe left or swipe right?
Swiping left on this. I chickened out on my 30th birthday when I was going to do this with my best friend, who I was his best man. He did it. I didn't. But I will tell you this, value add content, speaking of things happening in the sky, I did watch James Corden the other night, and he did all this stuff, George, with Tom Cruise. I did not know that Tom Cruise was an actual pilot who knew how to fly fast planes very well. So the bit started with Corden and him had jumped out of a plane before, and he upped the ante for Top Gun and took them all over the place. And I was just watching it, and I was nervous. So, no, I will not be jumping out of planes at this stage of my life, Lindsay.
Yeah, I'm swiping left on that, too. I've never had any interest in jumping out of a plane. Zero.
You know, it's funny, when I worked on Mason in Ireland, we talked about skydiving for some reason, and Mason proposed that everybody on the show jumped out of a plane together. And he was dead serious, and he kept this going for a while, and we never ended up doing it because he wanted to get it sponsored and everything, and they're like, no, too much of a liability for the company.
Realness would never.
Right, that's what I was going to say. And also, 106-year-old person, I mean, what are the forms we're signing away there?
I feel like the potential to have a heart attack or something would be extremely high in that situation.
Or any organ failure whatsoever when you're at level 10 when it comes to life. Wow.
I mean, I was worried about Tom Cruise in a couple of those scenes. I know it's fake, but, you know, from a movie perspective, I'm just like, oh, geez. But
terrifying.
You know, jumping out of a plane, I would do it, but I would need to do the tandem thing with somebody who's already done it before.
Agreed.
All right, next one. So you guys mentioned it briefly earlier. LeBron James is officially a billionaire. The Lakers star is worth an estimated $1 billion, according to Forbes, which makes him the first active NBA player to join the billionaire club. The only other basketball player to ever be worth 10 figures is Michael Jordan, of course, who earned that moniker 11 years after he retired when his stake in the Charlotte Hornets increased to 89.5%. This was back in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So while LeBron has earned more than $385 million in pre-tax salary during his playing career, according to Forbes, he accrued most of his wealth off the court through a lot of his savvy business moves over the past couple years, like super recently. So is LeBron officially becoming a billionaire a big deal or no deal, Clinton?
Big deal to me, and allow me to use this moment to do a Sedano-like name drop. I will be appearing in Spring Hill Productions' new documentary called After Jackie. LeBron James is an executive producer on that, and I will be going down to your town, Sedano, for the premiere in Miami. I'm looking forward to that. But more importantly, I do think that LeBron James is an example of something that we're probably not going to see again in America. He's been famous ever since he was 15 years old, and he's never done anything wrong, and he did it with his own people, and he did it by jettisoning people that thought they knew better than him. Remember when he fired everybody on this team? Was like, no, I'm just going with my boys. Everybody's like, dude, you're just going with your boys? That's how you're going to run this thing? Well, turns out his boys were smarter than everybody. He's got a lifetime deal from Nike, and he's doing all this great stuff. I love LeBron James in that regard, and you're never going to be able to convince me otherwise, George.
Yeah, big deal. I would say swipe right on that. Sure.
I was going to say, I forgot to add the caveat where I was doing this one as a big deal or no deal because we're not doing that today. My bad.
We got it.
Thank you.
Yeah, big deal and swipe right, both at the same time. And look, I mean, it's a very exclusive club, right? And I think that, to Clinton's point, just to add on, you know, and he's kind of referenced this, right, in the past over the years. He's, you know, look. Statistically, I'm not supposed to be here. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are listening right now that grew up in a fashion that, you know, was not the easiest of times, is my guess.
Underprivileged is the word we use now, but rough is the word we use now.
Yeah, right. And I think to have someone accomplish what he's accomplished, to your point, like, if the worst thing he ever did was I'll take my talents to South Beach, and right. I said this at the time. This is not revisionist history like some of the Andre Iguodala votes for MVP in 2015.
Yes.
I said, if that's the worst thing he ends up doing, we're going to feel really stupid about it. Mm-hmm. The reaction to it, obviously.
I agree.
By the way, can I just bring in a little – some bring back what we were talking about earlier? You mentioned Jason Lloyd and why him voting for Andre Iguodala and that whole thing and not voting for Steph Curry in the MVP finals of 2015. I asked him. I said, why didn't anyone vote for Steph in the 2015 finals for MVP?
Inside information.
He says, Iggy flipped the entire series when he entered the starting lineup. LeBron's numbers were, when Iggy was on off the court, were drastically different. Iggy changed that series more than anyone on the Dubs roster. Now, after the vote, wait, I don't know if I could say this part, but I'm just going to say that the thing I said earlier about they may or may not have voted for LeBron, and then he said he didn't want it, and they may have had people change their votes. I'm just going to stand by that.
Okay. All right. I also think that, George, in real time, the vote was going to the person who neutralized LeBron. You know what I'm saying? Like that was just part of what we'll just say we're not supposed to say on TV, George, the narrative, you know?
I mean, did he neutralize him, though? He's still – I know he shot 40%.
I'm not agreeing
with
it.
And that's really terrible for LeBron by LeBron's standard.
I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying
that
I understand that.
He scored 34 points a game.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, come on.
He did also mention that someone from the Cavs said he thought that Steph should have won because the Cavs geared their entire defense to stopping him. So
right.
Thank you. Oprah Giff. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Not just Matthew Dellavedova, like some people thought.
Deli!
Shouts to Deli. What's Deli doing these days?
I mean, he's
probably
still in the Cavs, I think. Like, at least he was.
Is he really?
Is he in the league?
Yeah, he was last
Deli's
year.
Deli's still getting checks?
Yep.
Oh, what a boss.
I don't know if
If I were Deli, I'd just go back to Australia and be the baller there. You know what I mean?
But
be like the big man on campus.
He's such a cult figure in Cleveland. Like, he's a god in Cleveland.
But,
you know?
Yeah, okay, but guess. Do you want to be a god in Cleveland or in Australia?
Or Sydney, Australia.
Yeah, that's a good question. He might be over Australia. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
How about that?
Crikey. And what's next, Lindsay? Do you have one more?
I do. So speaking of Nike and all the billionaire stuff, Nike co-founder Phil Knight and Dodgers co-owner Alan Smolinski have offered in writing more than $2 billion for the Portland Trail Blazers NBA franchise. The Trail Blazers were long owned, of course, by Paul Allen, and Allen bought them in 1988 for $70 million. That's quite a difference, quite a return on the investment there. But then, you know, Paul Allen died 4 years ago, and the team has been part of the late billionaire's estate, which his sister owns. And she apparently wanted the Trail Blazers to be purchased by some very passionate owners or group of owners. So
right,
do you think
and
it's
people
a big
that were going to keep the team there, too,
yes,
which
exactly.
Phil Knight would, yes.
Yeah, so big deal or no deal is my question on that he's probably buying the Trail Blazers.
Big deal. I think it only makes sense, right, that the guy who helped basketball get to a level that it got to, the NBA specifically because of his shoe company, be involved in the sport in a bigger way. You know, like I have no issues with it. And I also think, much like Adam Silver has said in his State of the Union that he's doing right now as we speak at the NBA Finals, that, you know, the preference is to have someone who would keep it there. And he would. He's an Oregon guy. You know what I mean? The Nike's facility is based in Oregon. It's why the Oregon Ducks are as prominent as they are in college football because of Phil Knight. So I think it makes sense. I mean, if you've ever been to a game there, and I'm sure there's probably some Laker fans who are listening right now who have been to a game at the old Rose Garden. That's what I'll always call it.
You right.
know, I know it's called Moda Center now. But like that place is crazy fun to watch a game. Those people get after it. So I hope that that's the case because I want someone to keep it there.
I would go so far as to qualify this, George, as a huge deal. And not just because of the Portland element, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a big labor understanding guy. But when I heard this, I thought, hold on a second. Nike makes the uniforms. Nike's got buildings named after people currently in the NBA or around basketball. Is there not quite a conflict of interest, but is there some element of a competitive disimbalance here that would be presented by the person who runs Nike to be involved with the Blazers? He's not just an Oregon guy. He is the Oregon guy. You know what I mean?
I mean, I get what you're saying.
And I'm just, don't know this. You know what I mean, George? I'm not saying you couldn't work it out, but I'm saying that if you're looking at a situation where it's like, oh, well, if I go play for the Blazers, I'm a Nike athlete for life. That seems, if I'm the union, I'm like, hold on a second. What is going to make sure that he doesn't utilize his Nike influence unduly to try to run his team, if that's even a thing we decide is going to be a problem? I actually legitimately want to know that from, you know, the powers that be.
I guess, you know, what you're saying is perhaps some salary cap shenanigans.
Yeah, or more so just like, and maybe not salary cap shenanigans, but do you have an unfair influence on what players are willing to do in their careers because of what you can maybe provide them after their careers as a result of having closer proximity to the Nike Corporation because of the team you play for and your owner? You know what I mean? And I don't know that that's fair to even criticize. That might be outside of the purview of what the union does, but it's certainly a question I would ask if I was another owner in the league.
And I think it will come up. Yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But Look, the NBA is eventually going to be in Vegas, and there was no bigger issue for them, or any sport, really, professional sport in this country, than the gambling aspect and the taboo nature of it. So if they can work their way around that with now the Raiders and the Golden Knights and maybe eventually a baseball team, and it seems fairly obvious that it will be an NBA team at some point, if they can get around that, I feel like they can get around Phil Knight and Nike.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. To me, it's not that it's not the same. It's just that it's a slightly different kind of
hurdle. I'll do it this way, too. You know? If Phil Knight was buying the Lakers or the Knicks, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I still think it's going to be brought up. I think you're 100% right. Your hunch is right on this.
Word.
But I think it would be a bigger issue if it was one of the glamour teams.
Okay. That's fair. But that was the first thing that came to my mind. I was like, and my boys from high school team, they were all like, yo, is this fair? And I was like, I don't really actually know. Excellent question.
And we'll find out, I guess, right?
Yeah.
All right. That is Big Deal or No Deal and Radio Tinder all wrapped into one. How about that? So we've got one more segment to go before we turn it over to game one of the NBA Finals right here on 710 ESPN. You're home for every single NBA Finals game. But our buddy Blake Harris, who is our Dodgers insider, subscribe to his Substack. No one's doing better work than him on a day-to-day basis on the Dodgers. Support this young man. We love him. We think very highly of him, hence why we have him on weekly. He's going to join us in 2 minutes. But first, let me remind you that Radio Tinder is always presented by our sponsor, Tequila Mandala. Mandala. Always swipe right on Tequila Mandala. Award-winning small batch premium sipping tequila made from the finest mature agaves available everywhere fine tequilas are sold. Visit their website, tequilamandala.com. Mandala. And of course, do what I do. Demand the extraordinary with Tequila Mandala. I think that's Mason's problem. He was burning too much. That's why he showed up to work today.
Look out. This is a banger.
It is a banger. So game one of the NBA Finals is going to come on here on the air as soon as we're done here at 6 o'clock. But every Thursday on the show, we talk to our man Blake Harris. Subscribe to his Substack. Nobody's doing better daily coverage of the Dodgers than this young man. So we support him. Hopefully you support him as well. So, Blake, let me just tell you a couple things I'm out on right now. I'm out on Craig Kimbrel. You know, very similarly, interestingly enough, I had a similar observation with Kenley Jansen last year where I felt he was getting lucky. His strikeout-to-walk ratio was really poor, I thought, early in the season last year. And he was just getting too many guys on base for my liking, and I felt like he was being fortunate. Now, with Kimbrel, it feels very similar, except I have less of an inclination to believe that he can find his way out of it. Where do you stand on Craig Kimbrel and the closing situation at the moment?
Yeah, who would have thought that at this point in the season, Dodgers fans would kind of be begging for Kenley Jansen to return, especially, you know, the way that he went out last year. But, yeah, I mean, Craig Kimbrel, I mean, he's gone off to as bad of a start as you can have imagined. I mean, again, he talked about it last year with Kenley. It seemed like every outing he was allowing someone to get on base. But, you know, the numbers were still really good. I mean, they were all-star caliber numbers. Whereas this year, I mean, Kimbrel's ERA is just below 5. Essentially every start or every outing, I think 13 of his 16 outings, he's allowed at least one base runner. So it's been ugly. He's putting guys on base. Which is kind of weird because you look at his advanced numbers and apparently all of his peripherals are actually really good. So I guess luck isn't on his side, whereas, you know, last year luck was on Kenley's side. So hopefully based on those underlying numbers, things turn around. But, yeah, Kimbrel, I mean, he's been, you know, the worst reliever in the Dodgers bullpen at this point. And looking at numbers as a whole, he's been arguably the second, third worst closer across Major League Baseball this season.
It's something that the Dodgers have weathered a little bit, but these last couple series, particularly against bad – not last couple, but they've, you know, not played well against bad teams, particularly this last sweep against the Buccos. I mean, I didn't love the way they hit with runners in scoring position. I don't love the way they approach things in that regard specifically. But from your standpoint, what did you see that went wrong outside of that in terms of the Pirates series?
I mean, watching that series, the Pittsburgh Pirates, they looked like they were the better team. I mean, they hit with runners in scoring position. They pitched really well, and their defense was phenomenal. I mean, it seemed like they were making gold glove play after gold glove play, and the Dodgers, things just didn't go their way, like you said. Didn't hit with runners in scoring position. The starting pitching was awful. The bullpen got lit up, and they made some really, really key blunders on the bases as well. So, you know, it's weird that, you know, you lose to a team like the Pirates, and it seems like, you know, the sky is falling. I think it's the first time the Pirates actually swept the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium since 2000. I wasn't even in elementary school yet, so I don't even recall that. So it's been a long time, but it was just, I think, one of those series where, you know, the other team comes in, things are clicking for them. I mean, this is the Dodgers team. We expect them to win, you know, 65, 70% of their games. And that's the crazy thing about baseball. You could win 105, 110 times in a season, and you're still going to lose 55 to 60 times. So not a good series. Hopefully wash it off. But that was certainly interesting, watching a team like the Pittsburgh Pirates, of all teams, come in and essentially look like the World Series contender.
Blake Harris, our buddy here, Dodger Insider, joins us every Thursday at 5:45 to talk Dodger baseball. Is Gavin Lux good? Like, I don't know. I don't feel like – part of me says there's probably not a large enough sample size, but part of me says, like, my eyes tell me there are. Like, is he good?
See, that's the tough thing with Gavin Lux. If you were to just go in, watch him play, look at his numbers, he's a slightly above average player, which, as your number nine hitter, you will take in a heartbeat. The problem with Gavin Lux, he was a former number one prospect in all of baseball. This was a guy that was expected to be a perennial all-star, potentially be an MVP candidate, and he hasn't lived up to the hype. He hasn't met expectations. So a lot of people think because, you know, he hasn't lived up to the hype of the number one prospect in all of baseball, he's the bust. But, you know, again, all of his numbers are above average. He hits for contact. He's, you know, great on the bases. Defensively, he has his ups and downs. But again, this is a guy that, you know, is your number eight, number nine hitter on a day-to-day basis. So again, you don't need him to necessarily be an all-star caliber player. He's probably one of the best number nine hitters in all of baseball. But I agree, you know, it seems like you can't really make up your mind on whether he's good, whether he's bad. I'll go above average. He's above average. So hopefully that's able to answer your question just a bit with that.
One guy we know who is good, obviously, is Mookie Betts. Had a crazy May just in terms of everything he was doing at the plate. But I do want to ask you, beyond his excellent play, Marcus Lynn, that is, how would you grade the Freddie Freeman fit at this point? I know in the beginning of the season he said, yeah, this is still a little weird. You know what I mean? And he's come over. He's been a leader. He's had, you know, plenty of good moments. But I'm just wondering how you look at this at this stage of the season in terms of how he's meshing and how he's fitting for what their goals are between one another.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to give him an A+, but I mean, it's as close as you can potentially get, because with how much Max Muncy has struggled this season, the Dodgers have desperately needed a left-handed bat in that lineup to be consistent. And Freddie Freeman, I mean, he's having an all-star caliber season. So he's been fantastic. He's been a great number two hitter right behind Mookie Betts, right in front of Trey Turner at the three spot. And he's playing Gold Glove defense. I know he had a pretty costly error the other night.
Yeah, in the ninth.
Which was so out of character for him. And the thing that I absolutely love the most, he owned up to it. He said, I'm the reason that they scored the go-ahead run. So he took accountability. Sorry. And I just love it. I think he's great in the clubhouse. Every player absolutely loves him. He's playing, you know, Gold Glove defense. And again, with the bat, the power isn't quite there this season as it's been in previous years. But, I mean, he's been hitting above 300 for majority of the season. And again, you look at his numbers across the board among first basemen, he's one of the best. So tough to give it an A+, but again, I think maybe like an A- so far. I mean, he's exceeded expectations so far.
Blake Harris, our man, subscribe to his Substack. No one's doing better daily Dodger coverage than he is. Give me the latest on Clayton Kershaw and Max Muncy.
Yeah, so the good news is with Clayton Kershaw, it looks like he's going to go on a rehab assignment this Sunday. He's going to be at Rancho Cucamonga. And it looks like, assuming all goes well, he could be activated as early as next week. So the Dodgers will be getting him back in the starting rotation. And for Max Muncy, it looks like he's going to go on a rehab assignment as well the next week. So my guess is a week from now, maybe 7 to 10 days, Max Muncy should be back in the lineup as well. And it looks like Andrew Heaney, another name the Dodgers, you know, haven't seen for over a month, he's going to be going on a rehab assignment soon. So it looks like within the next, like I said, 7 to 10 days or so, the Dodgers are going to be adding back two key pieces of their starting rotation and a former All-Star and MVP candidate in Max Muncy. So, you know, they're getting the guys back slowly but surely, and it looks like about a week from now, they're going to be fully healthy.
Last thing I'll ask you, between that the injury situation you referred to and the high expectations for this roster, how do you think Doc's done so far putting these things together and managing this team?
I mean, I think he's done a great job. I mean, there was one game earlier in the season that I remember things just completely fell apart. I think it was against the Phillies, where he mismanaged a lot of things. There were a lot of questionable decisions that he did. But I think Dave Arbuckle's done a phenomenal job, you know, so far this season. Usually a good way to determine that is just to check Twitter following the game to see if the manager's name is trending. And I think I've only seen that once so far this season. So, you know, he's had to deal with a number of injuries. He's had to deal with a number of guys that have been slumping throughout the entire season. So I think Dave Roberts has done, you know, a phenomenal job. A lot of people say, I know I can manage a baseball team, I could do but I think it's a lot harder than it looks. I mean, I agree. So I think he's done a phenomenal job. I mean, again, with the hand he's been dealt, the fact that the Dodgers, I think, are half a game out of the best record in the National League. No complaints here with Dave. Aside from that one game a couple weeks ago that I'm still a little salty about.
All right, Blake Harris, subscribe to his Substack. Follow him on Twitter at Blake Harris TBLA. Brother, thanks for joining us. We will talk to you again next week.
Sounds good, guys. Warriors in six.
Thanks, wow. Blake.
I had a feeling that was coming. There was a take coming. Yeah.
By the way, he's not alone. Everyone on the ESPN set has picked Warriors to win. Jalen, Warriors in seven. Wilbon, Warriors in six. Stephen A., Warriors in seven. Magic Johnson, who's on set today, Warriors in six. And
Irvin.
Greeny, Warriors in six.
Very well. I believe in Doug.
Which means now Boston is definitely
clearly. I love it.
Come on, hashtag bleep Boston. What the
hell? Yeah, I know, but I mean, the bottom line is that this is a great matchup. That's just all there is to that. I love it. I'm glad to see it. I cannot wait to watch this daggone game tonight. I'm
now
fired
maybe,
up.
Maybe some people on their way home will see Jalen Rose at halftime wearing a pink suit. And listen, it takes a man with great confidence like Jalen Rose to wear a pink suit. I've made some bold choices on attire on national television, particularly at NBA games. I don't know if I do that. Although the only time I've worn something pink was I did wear a pink top, like a jacket, on the night we dedicated to Craig Sager in honor of Craig Sager.
That was
the only time I've worn it. Because it was extra bold, and also for a good reason.
Yeah, no, that's sort of a novelty, but it's a great reason to do it. I explored a lot of pastels recently when I was at the Kentucky Derby. Yeah, so that was big.
And now are we going a little aqua, a little teal?
No, I had a little lilac going.
Lilac,
lilac.
For those that don't know, it's in the purple family.
Yeah, thank you, Lindsay, for that. We played that game before. I had a little lilac going. Also had a bit of a white blazer going. So,
ooh, see, white I could definitely pull off. I'm good with that. But I need to look. I just need to make sure the tan's on point. You know,
because then you've got an awkward contrast situation. I don't have
correct.
That problem. I don't correct.
Have that problem. Which for me is not that hard. It's literally just one day. You know what I mean? Like just a couple hours, maybe even an hour.
Fair enough. With you.
So, Clinton, CY, I'll see you tomorrow. Thank you for sitting in, brother.
Absolutely. Are you coming in tomorrow? I'd like
to
see your face.
I mean,
no,
I'm not. Okay. It's Friday, bro.
Fine. Bye.
Traffic.
It's good to talk to you. Yes.
Muchas gracias.
Si.
So, Laura, thank you very much. Lindsay, excellent work as always. Appreciate you guys for listening as well. Thank you for taking the time to tune in and put up with our nonsense. Game one of the NBA Finals is up next.